Well, it's just a who's who of my favorites here tonight. Eric Edholm, senior editor of Pro Football Weekly, joining me courtesy of the North Olmsted Chrysler Jeep Dodge Ram Hotline. Pro Football Weekly celebrating their golden anniversary, and we looked that up. It's 50. Kicking off the 2018 season with Football Legends live in Crystal Lake, Illinois, this Saturday. The big reveal, again, the team for the ages, will be revealed on Saturday, and six Hall of Famers going to be at that. So I'm guessing, Eric, is this like a black tie and tails? You can't come up, you can't show up wearing like your Bernie Carbo jersey, can you?
Well, I could. You know, others could not. But, yeah, I mean, I've got sort of special credentials for that. But, no, it's funny. I actually asked what the I'm like, what is dress code for this thing? And nobody's giving me a straight answer. So I'm probably just going to go in Birkenstocks and shorts and see if that flies, you know.
I just want you to go up to, like, Anthony Munoz and be like Judge Man. How about a Fresca?
I don't know how far I get with that one. That would be interesting, yeah.
All right, before we get into the news of the day, and certainly there's plenty of it as we get ready for week one, I've got to ask you with this this team for the ages, which, again, go to profootballweekly.com if you have not already. And this was like a reveal all really the last – how long did it go? A few months, didn't it?
Yeah, we started it really early in the summer, and the point was to, you know, Pro Football Weekly was initially founded in 1967 in the first full season, which is really, you know, the merger of the NFL and the AFL. So what we did was to pick the best 50-man roster from the last 50 years. And so, you know, fan vote, but also a media vote, former players, former coaches. We had a great panel of former people, you know, involved in the NFL and current people in the NFL, Adam Schefter from ESPN, lots of Hall of Fame writers, Dan Pompey, et cetera. So, yeah, we put it, the fan vote was a big part of it. You know, we wrote these capsules up and tried to represent these guys. And so just for the Cleveland folks, let me explain, Jim Brown would not make the team because he didn't play in the modern era. So that was a big point of contention in Cleveland for a little while. We had to sort of explain, yes, Jim Brown would have made the team had we included pre-67, but we're just capping it at the last 50.
Well, you can certainly understand the frustration when they see the last two decades. They want to make sure that they get somebody in there because...
Well, they got Joe Thomas. We got Joe Thomas on the team. That's cool, you know?
Yes, and I remember talking to you about that last time you were on. Let me ask you, though, who was the easiest choice for you in terms of, you know, this great team? I mean, was there somebody that you just said, well, right off the bat, I don't even have to think about it, this guy absolutely has to be on it?
I think it was Lawrence Taylor. I mean, I would say that, you know, for me growing up, for some reason, you mentioned Munoz. I don't know why, but he was like the first offensive lineman that I personally noticed where I was like, wow, this dude's just different than everybody out there. So Munoz was going to make it for me no matter what, I think, just because I always, you know, seemed to kind of hone in on him. But Lawrence Taylor, I mean, he changed the game in a way that, you know, I don't think you can leave him off the list. And I don't believe anybody did. I hope not. Anyway, at least on our experts poll, I'm sure there were some fans who, you know, some Eagles fans or Cowboys fans who had a personal grudge. But, you know, you just hear about how, you know, Joe Gibbs, you know, Bill Belichick, people who either coached him or coached against him in the 80s, saw how devastating a destructive force he was. You know, there was no way, and the way the modern pass rusher is kind of revered these days, and LT really kind of greased the wheels on that, I just don't think there was any way he wasn't going to make my roster and the other, you know, 18 panelists' rosters as well.
To extend that point, I mean, Clint Didier in the H-back, didn't that position was created for Lawrence Taylor, was it not?
Oh, absolutely, you know, to help Chip and everything like that, and you know, I mean, Joe Gibbs did a lot of the one-back formations and moved that H-back into that spot to help defend that because everyone used the fullback back then. And you know, that had to be considered in your blocking schemes because nobody wanted to leave a right tackle against them or even a left tackle. Even if your pass blocking, you know, your best pass blocker was out there, the sense was one man can't slow down Lawrence Taylor and they're going to move him around. So let's have that versatile player to help kind of slow him down or at least, you know, not kill our quarterback or something like that.
Who was the toughest omission for you?
Oh, that's a good question. I'd have to probably maybe like Calvin Johnson or somebody. I mean, the receiver position was pretty darn deep. And I think I did a pretty good job of making sure that, you know, some guys from the early days who were so dominant in their era made it. But I'd have to look back at some of the positions. But, you know, I mean, Calvin was so good, and he played on so many losing teams, and it was just, you know, it was just one of those things where if I had one extra spot, I think I would have had him on there. Safety was a little tricky. You know, I mean, I had to have guys like Ed Reed on there, Ronnie Lott, et cetera. But I think I left off somebody that a lot of other people voted for. You know, again, we finished the voting like 2 or 3 months ago, so I have to go back and look at the guys that were on my – there were 3 or 4 that I looked and said, wow, am I really leaving them off my team? But what happens when you pair, you know, so many great players down to a list of 50, which is only, you know, 3 to 5 at each position, really. So it was a fun but very brutal challenge in a lot of cases.
Well, a job well done. I mean, it was just awesome stuff to follow along. You and the team just did a great job with that. Let me shift gears here and talk about, obviously, the big news. The big news, in addition to what's going on for you guys Saturday, is there's a new addition to the Chicago Bears, which is where you're based at. And I thought this was really, really intriguing. Your colleague Hub Arkish wrote about how maybe this is a comparison to the Packers. Ron Wolf back in '91. You mentioned, you know, the Jim Brown era, and of course Vince Lombardi's Packers. Well, after Vince Lombardi left, it was kind of nothing really happened for the Packers, which is kind of what's happening or what has happened for the Bears. And then all of a sudden, you trade a first rounder for some guy named Brett Favre. And then following the 92 season, a guy like Reggie White comes in as a free agent. And then the Packers just go on a run. Could we see something like this happen now with the Chicago Bears? When you're talking about adding Khalil Mack and you're talking about the draft and the way things have gone for them, what do you think?
I mean, it's a fascinating idea. They still got some work to do, but, you know, local boy Mitch Trubisky is now in the spotlight. I know he grew up in that area, but he, you know, you look at the surrounding cast, the players. Allen Robinson comes over from Jacksonville, great, you know, good jump ball guy and a deep threat and a red zone threat. You know, you get Taylor Gabriel to add that speed element to the game. They draft Anthony Miller. You got all these fun pieces on offense like, you know, Trey Burton and Tariq Cohen and Jordan Howard. Defensively, they've added so much, too. Akeem Hicks, I thought, should have been a Pro Bowler last year. They draft Roquan Smith at number 6. And now you go out and get, you know, probably the best. You know, look, I mean, I think he's as good against the run as he is as a pass rusher. He can also play in space a little. But, you know, a 27-year-old pass rusher, they just don't come available very often. So when a Khalil Mack is available, the price is going to be high, both monetarily and in terms of draft picks. So I think they just felt like they had to do it. And when you play, you know, Kirk Cousins, Matt Stafford, and Aaron Rodgers twice a year each, don't you have to get somebody who's going to take those guys down? I mean, I think that's sort of their reasoning there. So that's the Bears aspect of it. Could it be a Reggie White-like thing? Possibly. But Trubisky's got to be as advertised or as what the Bears hoped when they took him at number 2. So the pressure on him will go up if he doesn't have a pretty steady or a steadily improving season. This situation is all of a sudden really, really fascinating. They were one of those boring teams in football the last few years. They were hard to follow. There wasn't much going on here, so it's changed quite quickly.
You know, it's one thing to say, well, okay, hey, your team, Browns were rumored to be after him, along with the Packers and others, but it's one thing to say, okay, your team didn't go out and pony up 2 picks, but it's another if you're the Raiders and you're John Gruden, and I mean, you come in, we know that you get the big contract. We know about the perceived ego. You've got to move to Vegas in 2020, and all of a sudden, he goes out the door. And, I mean, what are the optics for the fans there? They've got to be, as much as they might like Chucky, I've got to believe right now he is not very popular in the Bay Area.
Yeah, and what about in that locker room, too? I mean, you trade a guy in the prime of his career over a financial dispute, what kind of message does that send? Not only to, you know, the players whose contracts are coming up in a year or two or whatever, but also to free agents in other cities who might otherwise consider, hey, you know, I'll go to Oakland for a year and then Vegas the year after that. And, you know, that'll be a good thing for my career. But having seen this, does that change their perception? Are the Oakland Raiders or the soon-to-be Vegas Raiders going to pay team players? This, to me, signals that they're in a reboot. You know, that this is a belief that even though they signed Derek Carr to this extension a few years back, he might be the next to go if he and Gruden aren't on the same page. And, you know, he brings in all these veterans. And now it's looking like he just wants to bring in a bunch of old guys. And Gruden has always liked the veterans. He had Tim Brown and Charlie Garner and all these guys at the ends of their careers, and he wanted to keep extending them and you know, keep them on the roster as long as possible, as long as they wanted to play. But I think at this point, it almost looks like, just don't make me look bad. You know, we may be in a rebuild, but I don't want to be Cleveland Browns bad. I don't want to be the number one pick bad. I want to be, you know, the 6th through 10th pick bad, and then we'll rebuild that way. So I don't know. Like you said, the optics are just terrible right now. And if you're a fan of the Oakland Raiders and you live in that city and you know they're leaving you and they're trading away players and dropping, you know, a really good punter and get, you know, trading draft picks for Martavis Bryant and dropping him. And doesn't it look like they have no clue what they're doing at this point?
That's putting it mildly, absolutely. And I think the criticism has been justified, at least from, you know, from my vantage point. All right, we'll get you out of here with this, buddy. Always appreciate the time. Now, we'll put you on the spot doing it. You know, a lot of folks are saying, could this be an all-L.A. Super Bowl? Some are saying, the usual suspect, no reason to go away from the Eagles and the Patriots. While Brady might lack some weapons on offense and certainly the first 4 weeks, who do you have, Super Bowl 53?
Yeah, I don't think the Patriots or Eagles will get back there. I don't know why. I just don't have I think they're both going to be good teams and both teams who make the playoffs, but I think they're both going to have some limitations. And with the Patriots, like you said, you know, maybe it's a lot like in 2009 where they didn't have the big playability on offense and you know, it was a lot of short stuff and they really never felt like that explosive team. Maybe the defense is a little better. I don't know. I just feel like they have a cap to what they can do this season, Brady at age 41. With the Eagles, I think handling success is going to be difficult for them, and it usually is for most teams. And we've already seen Doug Peterson getting testy this week with the quarterback. So I'm putting those two teams to the side. I really think, top to bottom, the Atlanta Falcons have a fantastic roster. I'm a little bit surprised there isn't more buzz on them. I mean, they almost took down the Eagles in Philly last year, even with all the chaos that was going on with that team. I like the Falcons over one of those LA teams you mentioned, the Chargers. I know the Chargers have been, you know, like the anti-Rabbit's foot team, but same thing, man. I just look at their roster and the quarterback situation. I say, can Phillip Rivers give them one more great year? Because that defense is nasty. They've got receivers. They've got an O-line now. I don't know. That would be a fun Super Bowl in Atlanta, by the way. You know, that would be the first true home team in the Super Bowl. So I'll say Falcons over Chargers in a prediction that's sure to go wrong in about 4 months.
One of the best in the biz. He's Eric Edholm, Pro Football Weekly. Buddy, enjoy the Football Legends live in Crystal Lake this Saturday. And might I suggest maybe the backless entry like Kramer with the tearaway. I think that'd be, now that I think about it, that's how you should enter into that thing.
I think I'm going to mull that over. I got a couple days to plot this out. I like that idea, though. Thank you, dude.
Thanks, pal. Have a good one, and we'll do it again soon. All right. Eric Edholm of the North Olmsted Chrysler Jeep Dodge Ram Hotline.